Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talk to the Audience, where this is always death. I'm one of your hosts for this one, Bob Mackey, still waiting for Simpsons Hit and Run 2. Who is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and I would just like to announce I signed an overall deal with NBC Universal for $1.
Wow, that's it? You should have held out for more.
Well, I get a free subscription to Peacock as well,
oh, okay.
So that just pays for itself.
It was worth it then.
Yeah.
But yes, welcome to many of you who are going to be new listeners to this podcast series of ours, because for the first time, it has burst out of the paywall. It escaped. It jumped over the wall, and now it's in the free feed, because the last week of every month in the Talking Simpsons slot, we'll now be doing our community podcast, which is where we talk about news in the Simpsons world and in our world, and then we respond to your questions and comments from the last month's worth of episodes.
Mm-hmm. Both on Talking Simpsons and the sister show What a Cartoon. So you get to hear us pick our favorite comments and chat all about them. And yeah, this is, you know, our changed up schedule. Not only did we begin our revisiting of season one, but also we are, you know, sharing with you guys our community podcast once a month, also just to ease up our schedules ever so slightly in these very busy times.
And it has helped a lot, I will say. This has been a much better month for both of us, I think. Even with a live show and even with me having a Retronauts weekend, I still feel like I have room to breathe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I think and it's made us more productive and get, you know, cooler. Man, we have some cool guests lined up and some cool stuff planned.
Mm-hmm.
All of it thanks to us, you know, freeing up our schedules just a little bit. But man, February and March, big stuff coming guest wise.
I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
So let's get into the news. We've got quite a few news items today, starting with kick off this podcast with a happy, fun story that will offend no one. It's all about Apu, our favorite character on the show.
Yes, yeah, it's Apu Watch. We haven't had an Apu update, but I felt mostly our community podcast, the news section, are talking about Disney Plus
streaming
or Apu, pretty much. But I guess I'm bringing this up because many people shared it with us on Twitter, just like, hey, you guys see this? And I think both of our reactions were just like, well, he's just restating a thing that has been true for 2 years now, at least.
Not to sound too entitled, but I think some of these news places should reach out to us for comment, because the second this headline went live, it angered me, because I remember when Mike Reese was doing his round of interviews for his book, really good book, by the way, he was on Chapo Trap House. They asked about Apu, and on that podcast, he was like, oh, you know, we retired Apu like 2 years ago, and no one has even commented on it. Apu is not a thing for us anymore.
Yeah.
So That was an official statement by someone who works one day a week on the show and has been on the show for 30 years. I trust Mike Reese's statement on that, that no one bothered to quote, that no one bothered to look up, and it was in my brain.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's been like five other quotes just on this ever since. They've commented on it so many times. And these just spread around because it is easy clickbait. I hate using, as a former, you know, member of the press online, clickbait is a dangerous term that I feel like dismisses good content of just like, this headline makes you want to read it. But in this case, every time someone asks for a new quote from Azaria or another Simpsons producer about like, hey, what do you have to say about Apu? And they just repeat a previous statement. It becomes a whole new round of news of like, did you hear Apu's banned from The Simpsons? Censored Apu on The Simpsons.
Yeah, it's good, you know, a good way to stoke the culture wars, I guess.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess like technically it is Hank Azaria saying, I will not play Apu anymore. But that's like me saying, I won't order pizza at McDonald's anymore. There's no pizza at McDonald's. I can't order pizza there. So he can't play Apu anymore because Apu is no longer existing in the world. I guess it brings up the idea, should an East Asian actor play Apu? And my answer is that character has too much baggage. Mm-hmm. Maybe somebody new can run the Quickie Mart.
Yeah.
Or maybe even that's an issue. Who knows? But I think just stay away from the Quickie Mart. Mm-hmm. We've had like 25 years of Quickie Mart jokes. We can move on. I mean, we have so much Apu material. It's fine.
Yeah. This new specific source of the news was that Hank Azaria was doing a TCA panel, that's Television Critics Association, where basically a bunch of television networks bring around all their producers and actors to be interviewed by the television critics, who then ask them a slew of questions. The final season of his, you know, live action show.
Brockmire,
yes. Not, I almost said Huff. I was like, no, that was a while
ago. That's like 15 years ago.
But yeah, so he's promoting the final season of Brockmire. And of course, you know, somebody asked him an Apu question. And Azaria said, all we know there is that I won't be doing the voice anymore unless there's some way to transition it or something. That's the quote, which is just, again, pretty known quote, I'd say. It's been repeated, but I guess it is a new quote, suppose.
I'll give him that.
Yeah, but so, Ella, now, you know, the right-wing culture warriors have a new quote to spur them to make another 2 million viewed video about how people censor comedy and how you can't be funny anymore.
I'm sure, famous Simpsons watchers Ben Shapiro and Dave Rubin both had to weigh in on this. I didn't check because their Twitter feeds are poison for your brain.
Yeah, but yes, so let's get that out of the way, the Apu chat. Happier news about a voice on The Simpsons, though.
Yeah, so Kevin Smith is doing his I Didn't Die victory lap throughout entertainment, which he should be doing, honestly. Mm-hmm. We love Kevin Smith. Not a big fan of his movies anymore, but I'm just happy he's still around. But he's going to be playing himself on The Simpsons, and he was cast by Carolyn Omine.
Yes, yeah, Carolyn Omine, who, by the way, she's a strong Bertie supporter on Twitter, so thumbs up to you, Simpsons executive producer Carolyn Omine, or co-executive. I forget her exact title, but she's moved up in the ranks. But yeah, you're right. Kevin Smith almost died almost two years ago, a year and a half ago now, from a heart attack, lost a ton of weight, and is just kind of cashing every check he had of just like, well, you know, Ben Affleck, you should be in my movie again. I did almost die.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't actually do that, but I'm just saying.
I mean, I would.
It created a ton of goodwill.
Yeah.
And, you know, in general, when you have a scare like that, it does make people realize like, oh, they're not going to be around forever. We should just have this guy on. And honestly, just in general, Kevin Smith as a, you know, living character who talks about geek things, like, he should have been on Simpsons by now.
It's strange.
Honestly.
Yeah, it's strange that he wasn't on back in the Kevin Smith heyday, like the late 90s when he was, you know, Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and comic books, and just a bigger pop culture figure than he is now. But
yeah,
I'm glad he's finally making it. And I went to his Instagram post. It's the longest Instagram post I've ever read. I mean, he used to be famous for like his tweets. I'd be like, one of 86. And then you just read them all, and his really long blog post and all of his message board stuff. But yeah, go check out his Instagram post. It's very nice. A picture of him in front of the recording mic.
I mean,
yes, the recording mic.
I mean, look, if I was recording for a voice on The Simpsons, I'd never shut up about it.
Oh,
either.
Yeah. Like, we didn't shut up about it sitting in on a rehearsal, exactly. So yeah. we can't talk.
And, you know, we've had some upcoming guests even tell us to our face, we should be voices on The Simpsons. So, also, I guess the Kevin Smith thing, it reminds me, too, that it has been announced that he was going to be the co-executive producer with David Willis on a Howard the Duck cartoon show for Hulu. That has been canceled. It officially got canceled.
Canceled before the show aired.
Scripts were written, but it was coming to the point of like, okay, let's start animating these. And I think there was a big turnover in what Marvel Television is now. And I don't think Kevin Feige wanted Adult Swim style shows to represent the brand.
Nothing was animated is what you're saying.
Seemingly not. Okay. Seemingly not.
What a huge waste of everyone's time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you still get paid for a script whether it airs or not. But this happened, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago this happened where Donald Glover was going to show run a Deadpool animated series for FX, right. Like an R-rated one. And then eventually Marvel put the kibosh on it. They're like, yeah, you know, eventually Marvel gets cold feet and they just kill this kind of stuff. And so the only one that's still happening that has like an actual cast and is going to be animated is MODOK, which basically sounds like an Adult Swim style midlife crisis type show, but starring MODOK, played by Patton Oswalt, which is perfect casting.
It does sound fun. He has a giant head with legs and arms.
But yeah, hey, congrats to Kevin Smith. I look forward to hearing him on The Simpsons. I think, you know, I've been thinking about this too. I think Kevin Smith has become the new Stan Lee. Like, if there's anybody who is the Stan Lee of, like, he's famous for being himself and appearing in things and being like, well, let's ask Kevin Smith what he thinks about new comic book thing or new nerdy thing or Star Wars thing. That's what Kevin Smith is.
And he has a new costume too. He's no longer hockey jersey guy. He is giant purple blazer guy.
Yes, like, you're right.
He lost, I don't know, 200 plus pounds, but he kept the same blazer size. So he's like, stop making sense. Kevin Smith is walking around.
I love him in his cavernous blazers. Yeah. No, and I mean, he's got, he has given himself more hair as well, I've noticed. So like,
oh, really?
Well, Kevin Smith always had this like big...
He was bald.
When I saw him like 20 years ago at a con, I'm like, whoa, he has a really big bald patch you never see when he wears a hat. But hey, look, I'm not judging. Buy yourself some more hair.
Yeah, Kevin Smith.
All right, anyway.
That's a glow up. I call that a glow up. So I guess Disney put together a little clip reel of all these Simpsons episodes that had Star Wars references in them, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, well, Marvel.
Well, no, they did three.
This is okay. I only saw the Star Wars one.
Disney Plus was Disney Plus this last month because they lost the Mandalorian's over. They are advertising hard with like promoted tweets and other social media ones. And one of their smartest ones was to make three different clip reels of every time Simpsons referenced Marvel, Disney, or Star Wars. But those were three separate videos. And the Marvel one was the most interesting to me because they really ramped up their Marvel specifics in the last decade. Like, there were several in there. I'm like, oh, I've never seen that joke. Like, they did a post-credits joke on Simpsons that I totally did not know about.
I'm sure they had Stan Lee cramming the Hulk into a convertible, like a toy convertible.
You know what? They didn't show that clip because that, I think it's because it involves Batman. They don't want to reference that. They did show Stan Lee, but not that one.
That was putting him into the Batmobile, wasn't it?
Yes, okay, yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. I like that scene. I mean, and they had, there were a lot of specifics in there. I mean, they also didn't have the like, I don't believe they had the clip of someone put Amazing Spider-Man and Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. This will not stand.
Maybe that was too obscure for them.
And then same within the Disney one. They did, the only clip I saw in it from the Itchy and Scratchy Land episode was the 1205 parade gag. Definitely not Nazi Superman will be our superiors. I didn't expect that.
Conspicuously missing from the Simpsons Land at Universal Studios, which they basically play that episode in its entirety while you're in line.
Yeah, yeah, which is...
with all the clips added up.
Well, and Universal can be a little nastier because they know they're playing clips about Disney World and Universal. Yeah, and in the Star Wars one, the most noticeable clip that was missing was where they, in that Days of Wine and Dozes, where they made fun of George Lucas as like he's a short guy who just steals ideas.
Oh, yeah.
That was a weird joke because like George Lucas isn't short though.
No, and it was like 6 years after Phantom Menace and they did a Phantom Menace parody.
Yes, yeah.
It was kind of a funny parody, but it came like super late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I did like that it ended with Yoda in the Senate going like, begin they have, or have they? And he nods his head. That wasn't a bad joke, but yeah, Disney Plus going all out with the Simpsons clippage. But you know what? If you're going to try to go viral, get them in the fucking aspect ratio, guys. They still haven't done it.
No, the video was formatted for phones, so it was the other kind of cropping. So yeah, it was vertical cropping, not horizontal cropping. Not good.
People don't understand aspect ratios, though. It's a tale as old as
teach it
time.
In the schools, I say. We have another sad story here. We could have had a Simpsons Hit and Run 2, but unfortunately EA got the Simpsons rights and it never came to be.
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, Simpsons Hit and Run was the only good GTA-like before Saints Row, basically. Before Saints Row got good, actually.
Yes. Yeah, Simpsons, you know, after they did Road Rage, which just ripped off Crazy Taxi, but not that it was bad, but it was good. The Road Rage and Simpsons Hit and Run, they were the first one games that felt like they were made by people who obsessed about the show and knew every reference to cram in there. And even the Simpsons game, like, it did its best with that, but it felt still more corporate sheen on it than Hit and Run did.
Yeah, it's a very aggressively mediocre game, the Simpsons game. And I don't like mediocre games that joke about how mediocre they are. Just like, well, yeah, you're not being very good or entertaining. But the fun part of that game was there was animated sequences between levels, like real Simpsons like episode quality animation between levels.
I remember so much. It really sums up the game for me was you're doing the Modern Warfare. Sorry, the Medal of Honor section of it in a, you know, raging hellfish type sequence, but it's Abe saying, yes, it's an escort mission. I'm like, so you joke about the escort mission and then you still give it to me. Like that is my least favorite.
It's like jokey tutorials. Like, no, you're still a tutorial. Like, don't be so cute.
And there's a level in the EA Games Factory, which is just like, well, that's funny, but this is from the EA Games Factory.
Yeah, it was very self-referential. But I recommend if you want to learn more about the first game, the podcast Watch Out for Fireballs recently did a whole episode about it. And,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's not quite as good as you remember, but it's still very, very faithful to Simpsons lore, and you could tell it was made by super fans. So, yeah, very cool.
Yeah, so I guess just that Hit and Run 2, one of the developers did a recent interview where he revealed that there was a gameplay prototype for Hit and Run 2 that they were pitching to Fox, but then EA got the Simpsons right, outbid them, as EA is known to do. And so in the run-up to the Simpsons movie, they started working on the Simpsons game. They could make Hit and Run 2, which is too bad. I mean, there's even like, there are open world bits of the Simpsons game too, but it's like, it's just the game tried to have everything.
It's a real nondescript open world. It's not good. When I was playing it, I don't know, over 10 years ago, I'm like, this is it? Like, this is what you're getting? Okay, fine.
It's a weird year of playing the Simpsons game and watching the Simpsons movie in the same year. And now that's 13 years old.
Yeah. We might be talking about the Simpsons movie somewhere soon. Hint, hint. Perhaps.
Yes, yeah.
I'll leave this in. So we have some good news for Seth MacFarlane. The rich get richer over there in Hollywood.
Yes. Seth MacFarlane, in a shocking turn of events, signed a new production deal with NBC Universal, leaving Fox, which has been his home for over 20 years as the television producer. Now, he's still going to do Family Guy, American Dad, and Orville, which I wonder, like, how much time do you have to produce a TV show, new TV shows, when you are the star of a show like The Orville, a live-action show?
I think the episode orders on that one are pretty small, though.
Yeah, I mean, just set aside a month, and he's like, film everything. Or maybe in the next season, it's like, his character gets killed in the first episode, or he only says one line per episode. So Seth MacFarlane signed a gigantic deal, $200 million with NBC Universal. And the rumor in the Hollywood Reporter story was that, or their reporting is, Seth MacFarlane chose NBC ultimately because he was going to get to work on a lot more varied projects, while it sounded like Fox just wanted him to, or Disney, this would be a deal with Disney. The distinction between Fox and Disney will be important in the next news story here.
Oh,
but
geez.
He would have made a deal with Disney, but I think they wanted him to stick to what he had been doing. Well, meanwhile, NBC Universal apparently is offering a more varied stuff of like, do you want to make a weird thing for Peacock or sci-fi?
More acting.
Yeah, he's singing. It'll just be all songs. He's like, every idea he brings to NBC Universal is like, this one I sing for an hour long and it's every night.
More Rat Pack covers, but please, no more Seth MacFarlane starring movies. We've learned our lesson. Yeah. It didn't work.
but yeah, this also does throw into question the future of Family Guy, American Dad, and Orville. Now, American Dad just got renewed for 3 more years on TBS. It will actually get to a 300th episode.
That's great to hear because there's like 12 years of American Dad I haven't seen that I can just boot up on Hulu.
And Orville has been renewed, but Family Guy is a little in question about like now that Seth MacFarlane has made this deal, is Fox and Disney going to pay a lot extra for a guy who's not loyal or who isn't going to focus on, not that he's like run fan. I don't think he's really been the showrunner of Family Guy since season like two or five when they came back. Yeah. But the other side of this coin with Seth MacFarlane leaving is at the previously mentioned Television Critics Association. The boss of Fox actually has been talking about what their future is on Fox television broadcasting in a post-Simpsons, post-Family Guy universe.
They sure are making a lot of animated shows these days. I feel like we're in 1999 or something.
It's really weird, but yeah. I got to the bottom of this, I think. So for folks out there are just like, oh yeah, why does Fox keep announcing so many new animated series? The situation is that Disney bought all of these Fox Entertainment properties. They even do own Bob's Burgers. But Fox Television, which is a separate company and was not purchased by Disney, they still want to run a TV channel, and they also want to produce shows that they own for that TV channel that are not owned by Disney, like Bob's Burgers, Family Guy, and Simpsons. So in August, I admit this, Fox Television bought Bento Box, the animation studio that makes Bob's Burgers and many other shows. Okay. So they are using that as their new production studio for their huge ramp up in animation as they are trying to find the replacement for Family Guy, Simpsons, and Bob's Burgers.
I say bring back King of the Hill. You mistreated it. You did give it 13 seasons, to be fair, but fucking Mad About You can come back.
Yeah.
King of the Hill should be back on the air. Well, Mike Judge is done with Silicon Valley now. What else is Mike Judge doing? Tales from the Tour Bus, I think. That's it.
I mean, if Mad About You returns on a channel no one watches, did it make a sound? I don't know.
Where is that? I heard Paul Reiser on a Gilbert Gottfried's podcast. I'm like, oh yeah, but like this is a thing? Where can I see this?
It's on a cable network that's not around here.
Okay. Really?
Well, like a cable company, like basically if Comcast paid to bring it back to only play it on Comcast channels, which are, that's our local cable provider, which I hate, but we must use, that it's another one of those brought back Mad About You.
Wow, so weird. And did you know that Lauren Bouchard has another animated series that looks just like Bob's Burgers? It's all musical and it's only on Apple TV.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes,
no,
that's the only place to watch it, because every 3 weeks Twitter will just be nothing but Apple TV ads. just like, please watch Snoopy in Space or The Morning Show or whatever the Lauren Bouchard is doing Bob's Burgers and stuff. Thing for Apple at the same time. So weird.
And he actually has another show I just learned about as part of, so Michael Thorne at the TCAs, when talking about the animation expansion, they're just like, we're prepared for a future without the Simpsons. The Simpsons is expensive. Family Guy's expensive. It, like, the only committal thing he would say is like, Bob's Burgers has a long future on Fox TV. So I think this is the way that Fox TV is like getting people ready for the idea of they're not going to renew The Simpsons or Family Guy after their current renewal process. And the shows they have coming in the replacements, they've got a lot of big names to work on it, all being produced through Bento Box. The Duncanville show we've talked about before by
Mike Scully
and Julie Thacker with Amy Poehler. And then there's The Great North, which I had not heard about before. It's a single dad show where he's like Well, he's played by Nick Offerman, so you know the character this dad is.
Are we just reassembling the cast of Parks and Rec to make animated shows now?
But you spread them out. Like, yeah. Nick Offerman on one show, Amy Poehler on another show.
Where's Rashida Jones?
She's also on Duncanville.
I thought so. Well, yeah, you're right. Wow.
But The Great North, that is also produced by Lauren Bouchard. But the other showrunners are the Molyneux sisters, who wrote some of the best Bob's Burgers episodes. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that one.
And they renewed.
Oh, and also Minty, I forget her last name, sorry.
Minty Fresh.
She worked on Regular Show and was also a voice actress on it. She's great.
And they renewed Bless the Hearts for season two, which, bless their hearts.
Yeah, bless them.
I don't know if it's bad, but it seems like a way broader King of the Hill. And I really dislike how it looks. It looks like one of those Cliptoon Facebook thingies you'd see like four or 5 years ago. I mean, I know they only have so much to work with.
Everybody works hard on it. There's great people who work on it.
But it looks like something on my Facebook wall.
Mm-hmm. No, that shouldn't be there. My husband, Darren, has his pejorative for it. The way I use Rugrats as a pejorative sometimes, his pejorative for that type of animation is progressive ad. Like, that's
right.
It's like, that is some progressive ad shit right there. Like, again, I'm saying this about a show I don't watch, but there's one more. So there's a fourth animated series they're bringing up too after Duncanville, Great North, and Bless Their Hearts. I had not heard of until today, which was, it got announced in December, Housebroken, which is a show about Hollywood dogs.
Hank Azaria is back, baby.
But I believe it's like the secret life of the pets of famous people, I think it is. Or it stars Lisa Kudrow, love her, and also Jennifer Crinton is an executive producer on it.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So
they're hiring the right people, but I think really I hope they're hiring up a lot of great people. Bento Box, because this is a lot of work for one production studio to do, especially when, like, I love the look of Bob's Burgers, but the animation can be lacking at times.
I like the look of Bob's Burgers. Mm-hmm. It's one of the better looking shows of that type.
Yeah, but it's also one I can just listen to and enjoy way while I play something else.
It is a fun podcast and a show.
Yeah. So, but I guess the ultimate Simpsons news of that bit is just like Michael Thorne, the president of Fox Television, he is preparing you for the day they're going to say we're not renewing The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. So
it's going to be a dark day for baseball. Or sorry, TV.
Well, and speaking of sports, I have one last crummy, stupid thing to mention in the news. Like, I found a, as you may know, Bob, the Super Bowl is this weekend.
I was going to say, when is the Stupid Bowl? I went there. Sports ball. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, the Super Bowl is this weekend ahead of us if you're listening to this on Patreon, or it's 2 days in the past if you're listening on the free feed. But either way, it's the Kansas City Chiefs versus the San Francisco 49ers. And in an attempt at going viral with, did Simpsons predict it? I found a local ABC reporter in Kansas City from KCTV5 tried to say that the Sunday Cruddy Sunday episode predicts that the 49ers will defeat the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Oh, wow.
See, his reasoning was that I was going to play a clip from it, but he takes a real long time to get to the point of it. But basically, Sunday Cruddy Sunday takes place in Miami, which is apparently also where the Super Bowl is this year, I think. I don't know. I could be wrong. But he says that there's a red team versus a blue team. The red team looks like the 49ers. The blue team looks like the Chiefs. And the red team won.
Seems like a bit of a cheat to me.
Yeah, I think so, too. The guy's trying to go viral with the Simpsons predicted it.
It's it's like the magic eye test of... magic eye picture of Simpsons predicted it. It's like, I can kind of see that if I squint.
I will give a thumbs up to the reporter in it that he did correctly bring up that in the early 90s, the Simpsons did predict the Super Bowl rightly 3 times in a row.
That's correct, yes.
They really did, like, just straight up saying, Lisa says this team will win, and they did win.
They should just rerun that episode every year and change the teams. I mean, it's a good episode to begin with.
Well, now it doesn't look like regular Simpsons, and it's probably, they'd have to cut, like, an extra 2 minutes from it for commercials now, I bet you. Yeah, but I guess we shall see this weekend if Cruddy Sunday predicted it accurately that the 49ers will defeat the Kansas City Chiefs. I'll be in Disneyland then, so I won't be.
I'll be hanging out with Nina here, probably going someplace that'll be evacuated thanks to the Super Bowl. So that's the perfect time to go out and buy groceries, I swear. If you're not into football, go to a place that's normally crowded. You'll have lots of fun.
Yeah,
except bars. Don't go to bars.
I'm hoping at Disneyland it will be that case as well, and I'll be able to just like walk on to Rise of Resistance.
That's a perfect time to go. Actually, someone told me Super Bowl Sunday is the perfect time to go to Disneyland.
Oh, awesome, man. All right, cross your fingers, everybody, for my, I guess, again, if you're listening to this on the free feed, I already did it, but wish me well in the past.
I'll be seeing Mystery Science Theater live the day before.
Wow, that is definitely a protest against the Super Bowl by going to that.
So we have some news about us, and the live show was on the Patreon last week. It's on the free feed this week, so you all have probably heard it. So much fun. Well, I think it's our best live show yet. Our biggest crowd. We got the main stage at Piano Fight in San Francisco. Jordan Morris was great. I couldn't be happier with how that turned out. Mm-hmm. And I think like with every live show, I get less and less nervous about it. If you don't count the 5 minutes before we go on.
Yes. Yeah. That was a lot of pacing. And it was Jordan Morris, especially, he did something that really helped me in the pre-show jitters. Was he committed to a lot of nothing small talk with me just to get my mind off of the countdown of the last 5 minutes.
He was a great guest and who gladly offered to be a guest without us having to look. So that helped us out so much, and he was perfect for the topic.
Yeah, I can't wait to check out his Disney Plus show he promoted in that one. It's just great guy. Yeah, and thanks to everybody who came out for it and, you know, got the posters, the great posters that Nina made. Like, just so much fun. And also, I think everybody really enjoyed your video, Bob, that even if they weren't there in person, they got to enjoy it on the Patreon.
Yeah, in case you haven't seen it, it's on Patreon. It's a free post, but we ended the show with a death reel featuring all the characters who didn't quite make it. And I know people are like, well, Bleeding Gums live till season 6. And I say, you know what? That's not funny.
Yes, that's not funny.
I wanted to be funnier.
It's funnier to do that.
Yeah, he eventually died. And I know Marvin Monroe actually didn't die because he came back as a surprise in season 15.
Yes.
But yes, please check it out on Patreon. But yes, I can't wait to do another live show. Maybe we'll do PAX again this year. Who knows? That was really fun and an easier trip for us.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun at PAX West. That was a really good time with another really cool guest on that too. We have so many great, such great luck with live show guests.
Yes, including guests who came here to Berkeley in person last week. We can talk about who they are, right?
Yeah.
They'll be in an upcoming episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think next week's episode, but you guys can know about it now. We, as part of SF Sketchfest, we had our buddies Found Footage Fest. They came to town we had Nick Pruer on before, and then we had Nick on before, and his co-host on Found Footage Fest, Joe, he was able to come on the show as well. So next week, you will be hearing those guys talk about No Disgrace Like Home. And they were so nice. They came here they came here about 6 hours before their flight to Toronto.
And recorded for over 2 hours, right?
Yes, yeah. And also, they came in with like, they have props for their live show that they brought in with them.
One of them is an industrial penis pump.
It is, yes.
You got to see the live show to figure out what it is.
Oh, boy. I did want to say, hats off to them. They did an amazing live show. I sometimes still have nightmares about it, honestly.
I think, Henry, you're more cut out for the non-After Dark version of their show.
They're VCR Party Live, which is just fun things, and ALF puppets. That's a nice, wholesome show. But if you've got a stronger stomach and you're ready to see some of their adult stuff, which is not in any way sexual, it's horrifying.
No, it's great. And they tour so much, and you should definitely see them. They're great guests, too. They'll be back. And they were so friendly and so kind and very very much praising us and our work, so I really appreciate that. They do good work too.
Yeah, I love those guys. Check them out, and you're gonna hear them on next week's episode. Though we did for their time constraints, when we did the whole biography on the writers and directors, we did that without them, just of like, we don't want to make you guys sit around for 20-30 minutes while we talk about directors of the episode.
And it's going to be a fairly long episode because we did a writer's corner for Algie and Mike Reese, which I think was maybe like 20 to 30 minutes long. long.
And then 10 minutes on the director, Greg Vanzo,
yeah,
as well.
So it'll be a beefier season one episode. But I'm loving this season one revisit. I'm getting so much more out of it. We can play more clips. We can just dig down deeper because we are doing this for a job, for a living. So we have more time to spend on it.
I bet that one is 5 times longer than the first time we did see that episode. And
I think you're right.
I hope you guys are enjoying it too. You know, it's just been a lot of fun to just go into the history and really talk about the production of season one and to celebrate season one as a legitimate season of good television to watch instead of just going like, season one sucks, skip it. It's not funny. Who cares? Like it is them figuring out the Simpsons, but it's funny as they figure it out.
And I'm learning new things on this watch through. I didn't think I would. It's actually, I thought it'd be like, we're not doing this because it's easier. We're doing this because, you know, it's a fun thing to do and appropriate. But going into this, I thought, this will be a lighter load for me. It's like, no, actually, I think I'm working more on these just because I'm like, no, I have to get this right. And this is like very important historically, this first season. So I want to dig as deep as I can. So yeah, we're spending lots of time on these. They're coming out very well. Yeah. I'm very happy with what we're doing.
Yeah. And I hope all you guys are enjoying it too. And in general, I guess like, I hope you guys are enjoying, you know, the new schedule for Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon as well. You know, I think it made us be able to focus more on these things and do all this extra research for season one, like it, or to prepare for some bigger stuff down the road we're going to do. So I hope everybody's enjoying the new schedule. Let us know in the comments how you're feeling about it.
We're already working farther ahead than we did in the last 2 months of 2019. So we're really doing a good job here.
Which is good too, because you know we got a limited series coming up again soon, or a mini series, I guess we should say. It'll be here before you know
it. Should be landing in March or perhaps early April. We got to figure it out, but it will be here in the spring.
And also, I guess if you guys have enjoyed this new What a Cartoon movie that just came out, next month should be pretty fun too.
Yes, it's going to be 80s Disney, correct?
Yes, yeah. So the poll will be up at the start on February 1st, and you'll pick from one of 4 80s animated Disney classics to help us pick what the next What a Cartoon movie would be. Your votes shall decide it.
That's right, and the choices will be in chronological order, I believe. We have The Black Cauldron, The Great Mouse Detective, Oliver and Company, and The Little Mermaid. I have an idea of which one will probably win, but you guys always surprise me, so who knows? Maybe we'll do Oliver and Company, a movie I saw once when I was 5.
Me too!
Yes.
I don't think I've seen in full since I watched it in the theater as a 5-year-old, but, you know, Billy Joel's songs are eternal, and I still have, what should I worry?
It'll be fun to look at Disney during a darker time, just as things were picking up towards the end of the decade.
Now I have the proper cultural context to appreciate Bette Midler and Cheech Marin sharing a scene together.
That movie really was about an uptown girl.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I think, I don't think we'll be talking about Oliver and Company, but prove me wrong, children. Prove me wrong.
How about those mice? That's where I'm leaning.
I love Basil. Sorry. Yes.
No, I haven't seen that movie ever. I really want to see it.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. I've only seen the reference in Darkwing Duck. So let's talk about the What a Cartoon schedule for February, right?
Yes.
So the first episode of February on the Patreon, it'll be live on February 3rd, free feed February 10th. We have Yu-Gi-Oh! 5Ds. The episode is On Your Mark, Get Set, Duel.
The first episode.
Yes, with a very special guest, right, Henry?
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, we haven't recorded it yet, but we've if you like Yu-Gi-Oh! And when perhaps stories of Yu-Gi-Oh! Are shortened, I think you might like our guest this week.
And because Henry is producing this one, I'm going to challenge him to get the spelling and you know, the case of all of this right, because Yu-Gi-Oh! Is all intercapped. There are hyphens between it. There's an exclamation point at the end. 5D S.
Yeah.
So it's very overly complicated, one would say.
Which also is, I think, wrong punctuation, because it's supposed to be multiple D's. The 5 D's can mean dimensions or dragons, but it means 5 D's as in letters. Like, but some people, I was watching some videos, like they call it 5DS, but I've, you know, watched classic commercials from it from both Japan and America. It's 5 D's. So yeah,
please retain the apostrophe even though it's wrong.
It's card games on motorbikes, as
sounds
as
crazy
the meme goes.
So up next, Patreon date February 10th, free feed date February 17th, we have Goof Troops episode Nightmare on Goof Street. This is a Patreon request, and yes, we are going to the Disney Afternoon. We have not covered Goof Troop yet. A fine show, Disney sort of making their own lighter Simpsons in the early 90s.
Yeah, I mean, we cover the crap out of the Goofy movie. Sorry, a Goofy movie. We cover the crap out of a Goofy movie, and that was on a What a Cartoon Movie. But now it's time to go into the thing that really began the goofnessance of the 90s, Goof Troop. And yeah, that was a fun patron request.
And it's named Goof Troop because it was once about Goofy being a like scout leader, like a Boy Scout, you know, what's the boy, like adult
Scoutmaster.
Scoutmaster, yeah. So retain that title. You'll learn more trivia like that on the episode.
I did not know that.
Oh, very good. It's a perfect time for that impression. So up next in February, a very short month, as you all know, February 17th is the Patreon date. February 24th is the free feed date. We have the Netflix series Hilda with the episode The Bird Parade. Mm-hmm. So this is also a patron request, correct?
Yes, it's one of our top level patrons. They picked this one out, though I've been looking forward to doing it too, just as an excuse to watch the show. Hilda is seems like a very nice kid show based on a book series.
Yeah, a graphic novel book. Not as good as Sparks. Mm-hmm. I say if you got a kid, buy Sparks first and then buy Hilda.
Yeah, once you've bought Sparks for every child you know, then buy Hilda for your child. But yeah, and also it's interesting that it's like, I looked into it a little bit. The creator of the series also is showrunner on the show, too, or at least is involved in the show. And he had worked previously on Adventure Time. He storyboarded several episodes of Adventure Time. So I'm curious to look into it. It looks like a very cute and sweet show.
It does.
Very British as well.
Very twee. Yeah.
And we'll have on that patron to talk about why they wanted us to do that one as well. So just got to cram in all the Hilda by the I plan to watch all of it before we record it for sure. Yeah.
And the last week of February, of course, will be the extended preview of our What a Cartoon Movie. Whatever wins that month, we'll just have a 45-ish minute preview of that episode that you can hear the full thing of if you're on the $10 tier to hear our What a Cartoon Movies episode every month.
Yes, so please look forward to it, as Japanese game developers would say.
And let's move on to our questions and comments for episodes. And up first, we have Talking Simpsons comments. And the first episode we're covering is Bart the Genius. By the way, these are normally longer, but we did our talk to the audience late last month, and we're doing it early this month. So next month will be the normal rotation of questions. So Bart the Genius is first. Joe Quigley says, teacher perspective time. Just a quick correction that the school is more like a magnet school than a charter school. I found this episode really interesting because Miss Milan's classroom isn't actually that different from mine. I tell the kids my job is to facilitate their learning. I let them choose what books they read. And even the debate isn't really out of the realm of possibility for an average classroom if you provided them with some accessible text to grasp the content. In short, despite how exaggerated things are, the classroom isn't as wacky as I feel like the writers intended.
Well, I'm sure in 89 it seemed pretty wacky. The kids would have personal computers and beanbag chairs and could just learn in their own time.
Yeah, these are the people who grew up in the 60s, regimented, strict schooling, you know, very standardized. So I'm sure they were trying to make fun of the new progressive schooling.
No, I'm sure Matt Groening would have, at least then, would have agreed, like, oh, I wish my schooling was this instead of what I did have.
Oh,
like,
sure, yeah.
Yeah, I think they show that it's an improvement for Bart, but also maybe Bart has too much freedom, or it shows that you're miserable no matter where you are in Bart's case.
Bart should really be monitored with those chemicals is what I'm saying.
But I do appreciate that Quigley helped us have a little teacher perspective. He's done that in the past in our comments. Also on Bart the Genius, Stephen Nettle says, first, I actually have seen Carmen in Russian at an in small experimental theater in Moscow in 1995. It was very bare bones production and, well, pretty crappy even for post-Soviet experimental theater. To add to the surrealism of the show, the actor playing Don Jose was the spitting image of Carmine Ragusa from Laverne and Shirley.
Take your word for it.
Secondly, Tiny Toons oddly shared several storylines with the first two seasons of The Simpsons. An offensively accented convenience store clerk, a reaction to The Raven by a famous actor with a distinctive voice, Vincent Price, in the case of Tiny Toons. And finally, a troublemaking main character switching test papers with a genius. plucky switching test papers with Egghead, who I think only appeared that one time. That's right.
Yes.
They did that same plot.
And I just remembered the convenience store clerk was in the episode where Plucky stole the candy bar. It was like their anti-shoplifting episode. Right. It just was hard to watch because poor Plucky.
Yeah. I mean, Plucky was usually the one to learn a lesson. And I mentioned, I think this comes from, I bring it up on Bart the General. There's an episode where Hampton has to deal with a bully as well, being bullied by Montana Matt.
That's right, yeah.
In a very similar way.
It seems like these are all very much stock, like, kid school stories, almost.
I mean, and it makes more sense for Tiny Toons to deal with them than Simpsons, really. But, that Raven one, I forgot the Raven one. That, what is it? It's a camel who's the convenience store clerk, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's a human.
A human?
They didn't go that far.
All right. I must be thinking of
something
else.
You made it worse, Henry.
Hey, but that Egghead character, he did not have the longevity of Martin Prince.
That's fine. So we're moving on to Homer's Odyssey, and Stephen Nettle is back. Mm. And he says, for those growing up in the 70s and 80s, nuclear power was always something that made us nervous. One of my earliest memories about the TV news were the various reports about Three Mile Island in 1979, which was about 30 miles away. Flash forward to the late 80s, we had moved, and nearby was another nuclear plant with a reputation for safety problems. When I was 14 or so, we went on one of those tours, and they showed us a propaganda short pretty similar to Smiling Joe Fission. Afterwards, I asked the tour guide, who was boasting about how clean nuclear power was, some pointed question about how clean it would really be if there was a serious accident. He tried to reassure us that an accident was very, very unlikely. When I tried to say it could still happen, and if it did, the environmental damage would be pretty bad, he stopped calling on me and moved the tour along. He should have removed you from that tour, Stephen.
He should have said, like, free thinker alert, the free thought alarm.
We got a peacenik.
I'm wondering if that the Simpsons inadvertently, with making jokes about Homer working at a nuclear power plant, it defanged our generation's fear of nuclear power. Like I was alive when some of the bad ones happened in the 80s, but I didn't really pay attention to it. Like, and then the only thing I think of with nuclear power for the longest time was like Homer doing stuff, like even more than Chernobyl or whatever.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about it on Homer's Odyssey, but that was the joke up front. But the joke was, nuclear power is scary, huh? Mm. Well, this guy works at the nuclear power plant. Can you believe it?
Stupid. Yeah, that's his finger on the switch.
Yeah.
Like, there was a flare up of nuclear power fears. I feel like the last time was, well, obviously there was the Chernobyl miniseries, which, reignited people's memories of that, or reminding people, like, boy, I was fucked up that happened, right? But I think the last time in the real world was like the Fukushima situation after the earthquake in Japan in 2011.
I mean, personally, as a kid and teenager, I was brainwashed by SimCity. Like, no, not coal power, nuclear power, not roads, trains. So Will Wright warped my brain.
I've just been playing a lot of Civ, the phone game version of Civ, because it relaxes me for some reason, the Civilization games. But it does teach me the wrong lesson of like, well, what I need is money all the time. Money will buy me more things. Like, it makes you really into a capitalist. You lose a lot if you become a communist.
Can you give the app money to get Civ money in return?
I think so.
Okay.
And so also on Homer's Odyssey, our animation pal Thad Komorowski has some interesting insights. I've got to say, you went pretty easy on how bad this episode looks. Way worse than anything in the rejected first version of Some Enchanted Evening, which had bad stuff, but was mostly just down to miscommunication. That scene of Marge and the kids with no lip sync, the final shot of the crowd pan, this is just raw incompetence. Maybe the other episodes were so much of a shitbed that the glaring flaws of this lame but canonically important episode had to be passed over. Poor Wes Archer.
You know what? I agree with that. He was right to scold us. This is the worst looking episode. And because
ever of Simpsons.
Secretly, the cover for every talk to the audience is a character addressing an audience or, talking to an audience. And of course, Homer's Odyssey has one of the perfect talk to the audience screenshots. Actually, several of them, because third act is just him talking to a crowd of mutants.
Yeah.
So, man, nothing gets worse in The Simpsons than that crowd scene in Homer's Odyssey. They were not ready for a crowd.
they really weren't. And it was like Wes Archer's first show directing, too. I think, in fact, one of the ones Thad didn't even bring up is like, just in the show, Sherry or Terry's head is floating as they walk. Like they, yeah. they that's just a mistake still in the show.
They forgot the cell.
Yeah.
That's probably cropped out by Disney Plus.
You know, after just rewatching the Simpsons pilot footage that we did at the live show, the only difference I can see about why some Enchanted Evening got rejected and this didn't as harshly is difference of people. Like Wes Archer was their guy and they trusted him. And meanwhile, Kent Butterworth, he wasn't their guy. And I think you can see in the Some Enchanted Evening stuff, they took liberties that even Wes Archer didn't take, or it's the kind of liberties they didn't like. So I think that's why that one comes off as like, oh, it had worse animation. Like, not really, but it took wilder swings than this took that were actually good animation, but absolutely wrong for what they wanted The Simpsons to be. So, but yes, I totally agree with you, Thad. Homer's Odyssey, worst animated episode of The Simpsons ever. The animation never looked worse.
And we got through it as a society.
Yes, yeah.
And now it's on Disney Plus. So yes, on over to What a Cartoon comments. There were some Sketchfest comments, but they were mostly like, hey guys, awesome show, good job. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to read praise for myself. Yeah. It's like retweeting praise for yourself, which I do sometimes.
Time for 9 more minutes of compliments for us.
So up next we have Psychopass, our first What a Cartoon for January. The episode Crime Coefficient, the first episode of Psychopass, and the great Dave Whittington, our $100 patron, was on that. Thanks again to Dave for sticking around for so long as a high-level patron, and he will return.
Yeah, he's a fun guest too. I love talking about the anime with him.
So Batman Boy 11 says, my friends who are more into anime than I am hadn't heard of Psychopass before I'd asked them about it when you guys put out the January What a Cartoon schedule, so I had no idea what to expect going in, and I was very pleasantly surprised. I bought the first deluxe episode off of YouTube, so I watched the first two of the original version and was captivated the whole time. Initially, when the premise was being explained in the episode, I definitely thought of Minority Report and how 1,000 other Western stories have explored the idea of pre-crime to the point that I'm sick of it. However, even in such a small amount of content as the 40-some minutes I watch, this genuinely did a good job of bringing new directions to it and hammering home broader social implications beyond the morality and accuracy and debates of other stories. Yes, yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah, it was fun to come at this kind of concept that I thought was tired too, but at a new angle, like especially as it is like, no, it's about we live in a society, not how do we judge people kind of thing. Especially the bit, I like how it's not just about one person wrongly accused, it's how a victim of a crime can be blamed, mm-hmm. like, or even people around a crime. Like I like that it spreads the awareness there. And as you put it, Bob, I liked how you said you are damned by your credit rating.
Basically, it's not too far from our own reality. It's a very interesting yeah. social commentary. Mm-hmm. So I definitely recommend Psychopass. Check out that episode if you were unsure if you'd like it. I think it'll get you into a fun, darker show.
And then the next episode was Batman the Animated Series Almost Got Him, our first of our revisiting ones we're going to be doing once a month. Yu-Gi-Oh! 5Ds is technically our revisiting next month. So, but this one for Batman the Animated Series, man, what a fun episode that was. And Joel Hodson also had thoughts about the production company behind that episode Almost Got Him. Dong Yang very much feels like the show's second choice when it came time to assign episodes to animation studios. But it's pretty rewarding to watch the shows handled by this studio improve throughout the life of the series. Dong Yang ended up getting most of the episodes for the production season 2, as well as the new Batman Adventures. The worst studio may have been Acom, who got fired after one disastrous episode in Joker's Wild. Their production was more on par with standard kid shows with animation goofs and miscolored parts. Bob and Henry will get to talk about them in greater detail with next week's episode, as they did Bucky O'Hare as well as most of X-Men. Mm-hmm. And also the first season of Simpsons. They were the only production company for the first season of Simpsons overseas.
We certainly did talk about Acom in that episode.
Yeah, I mean, again, like I think talking up Dong Yang is good because, you know, sometimes especially Korean overseas animation studios can get a bad rap of just like, oh, they sent it to Korea. Like, I really hate to get in that direction about it. Like, and I agree. I think Acom was just like, yeah, this is the level Americans expect from us for the money they're giving us. What's the problem? Like, yeah.
So Drew Mackey, I believe from Gayest Episode Ever, correct?
Previous guest yes. on Homer's Phobia. Cool. Everyone should listen to that Gayest Episode Ever podcast. It's really great.
It's very good. So Drew Mackey says, this was great, and I am not a correctopotamus so much as someone who cares too much about Arlene Sorkin, but the Frasier thing is that Kelsey Grammer was never talking to the slubs who called in. Every call he got actually had him talking to Arlene, and then they dub over her voice with the celeb saying the same lines, which means she is kind of a bigger part of the whole series, just not on camera. She actually gets to appear in person in the series finale, which is also sweet. So
that
thanks.
Is great.
Yeah, I didn't know that. And I have to recommend a recent episode of Gayest Episode Ever. It's about a season 14 or 15 episode called Three Gays of the Condo,
yes,
which they covered. And they said, Drew said he's inspired by us in our research. So we approve of this podcast. Very good. I love it. Check it out.
I gotta listen to that episode.
They did a really good one on Seinfeld recently too.
Oh boy. Yeah. As I recall, Three Gays of the Condo, it almost felt like an excuse just to have Hank Azaria plays Birdcage character in all but name.
Basically, yeah, who became a recurring character. And then Scott Thompson is on because Harvey Fierstein didn't want to play a character that was so broad. Yeah.
Yeah, Carl was a trailblazer in his time. But
my mother said never kiss a fool.
All right, I got to listen to that one then, for sure. And look forward to us doing that one in 4 years? Three or four years to get to season 15, I think, now, on our new schedule. I think it'll take that long.
Yeah, I think so. But we'll get there. We'll get there. Mm. It's going to be quite a ride. So up next, we have the Animatrix, Henry.
Ah, yes. Yeah, the Animatrix, our movie. What a fun time. Our longest podcast to date.
Yes. And we had one concern by a listener that because Patreon has a file size limit, we have to cut the bitrate down of our longer podcasts, which makes them sound a little worse than our normal ones. In the future, if a podcast runs this long for our $10 people, we may just post it in two parts just to give you a better sounding podcast, because the limit is 200 megabytes. We can post 1,000,000 megabytes in a day, but it has to be in 200 megabyte chunks for some reason.
Yeah, but yeah, if you guys would prefer that, let me know in the comments. I'd like to hear that too. But yes, on the Animatrix, Adam East said, I was in peak Matrix fanboy mode at this time, and I did love the second Renaissance episodes, as well as Beyond Program and World Record. Lord of the Rings kind of stole my love after the disappointment of Revolutions, with Return of the King coming out the following month. As a note, in your World Record sections, he would have been running the 100-meter sprint, I believe. That's the standard in Athletics Olympics, with the world record being 9.58 by Usain Bolt, though I didn't know they still do the occasional 100-yard dash, which was something that I learned. Based on the 10-second split times of that in the 9.58 world record, Bolt would have run under 9 seconds in the 100-yard dash. So, okay, I was coming at it from a very American non-knower of sports section where I was well, obviously this run is the 100-yard dash because everyone runs in yards, not meters.
Meters, and a perfect name for a runner is Bolt.
Yeah, if Usain Bolt's record is 9.58 and that guy hit 8.75, like, he really must be a Matrix breaker for that kind of speed.
But also the name of my favorite Disney movie, Bolt, the classic animated movie we all love and talk about.
But it's cool to hear from another Matrix fanboy, too. What a funny time to think about. Again, the MCU never ends. So to think about how, like, 01, really 99 to 03 was Matrix and Lord of the Rings, and that was just 4 years, and then it was just over.
Bam, yeah. Slamming the door shut. I kind of prefer that.
Come on, Bob. There'll never be an end to Spider-Man movies. Isn't that great?
That's why Back to the Future still is my preferred movie trilogy and universe. It just is so tight. It's a tight little ball of movies, and you can't really unpack it.
Can you believe we're getting close to 5 years after the farthest they went into the future in that show?
It's terrible.
Yep.
I hate it. And we don't have, I don't want flying cars, but I do want not hoverboards. I want the 80s cafe. That's what I want.
Yes. Yeah. Why didn't anybody build that in 2015?
Well, now we're up to the 90s cafe. Bring me that. Yeah. Give me that. So we have Batman Boy 11 for our final comment for Talk to the Audience this month. And he says, the second Renaissance two-parter in a particular way was a very interesting exploration of the backstory of this universe. And upon some reflection, helped me make some more sense of the end of Matrix Revolutions, frankly. I always wondered why the machines would just honor their deal to back off from humanity once Neo gets rid of Agent Smith. But given their history, that all they wanted was to be treated like people, it makes sense that when someone so important to humanity would be willing to do so, that they would listen. And frankly, the turn of events leading to the machines and saving humanity is all too plausible if their inbuilt bias doesn't just have them become bigoted from the get-go, given how some AI has acted so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense that by building up the AI as wanting to befriend humans and being more of like a spurred by humanity, it makes more sense they'd be accepting of them and even wanting to, like, instead of entirely eradicating them and finding a new power source, like, nah, we'll keep you around. But you are our slaves now. But hey, we don't hate you guys. Not
just,
really.
Very, very gooey batteries for us.
Yeah, it's really about how both sides are wrong sometimes, Bob. That's the true message.
It really is. That always works out, doesn't it?
Yes. But seriously though, it was fun going back into the Matrix for this again. But I think the Matrix is the really only truly unvarnished film of theirs. Like the rest have their problems.
Yeah, so. And if you're listening to this, you want to hear our full Animatrix discussion. It's our longest podcast to date, 4 hours and 30 plus minutes.
25,
so almost 4:30. It just squeaked over the Cowboy Bebop movie threshold to become our longest movie, What a Cartoon Movie today. So yeah, that's available on the $10 level, along with all the previous What a Cartoon movies. Probably like 50 hours worth of podcasts you haven't heard at this point.
Maybe I should have pushed it to 4.5 if I had. Instead of putting 1 minute of a Rage Against the Machine song at the end, I should have put the 6 minute version of it and just put it to 4.5 hours.
We're really pushing Patreon and how much they will allow us to post in a given month.
Come like a bomb, ignite. Love it.
Is that really on the soundtrack?
That's actually the credit song on Matrix Reloaded.
Okay.
It's Wake Up is the, I think I heard a shot.
Well, they are Raging Against Machines very much so in the movie. So it's all too clever. But yes, thanks for listening. If this is your first time listening, welcome aboard. And I hope you guys are getting used to our new schedule. No complaints yet. And it's really helping us make better podcasts and to breathe a little and relax a little bit and, you know, enjoy time with our loved ones. And by that, of course, I mean video games.
Yes, I played all of Yakuza 6 this month.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. I played all of Yakuza Kiwami.
Oh, man. What a good time. See, isn't it nice to hear that we're having fun listening?
Yeah, yes.
And I played all of Dragon Quest Builders, too. I had a real gamer month I did here. But yes, thanks everybody for your support. Hope you guys look forward to next month's community podcast as well.
Yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month for another episode of Talk to the Audience. Thanks so much, and we'll see you then.
Infotainment.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Okay, so why do people love my Total Body Bar workouts? Because they work. My clients get an amazing workout and great results. I'm Andrew Rogers, professional dancer and trainer, and my Extend Bar classes are fun, only 30 minutes, and proven to help you get sculpted, lean, and strong. And right now, you can stream my Extend Bar classes for free on the Beachbody On Demand app. See how effective these workouts truly are. Start for free today at beachbody.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.